Welcome back to the Film Experience Podcast. I am here today with a special guest, Sheila O'Malley. And it can be found on the Sheila Variations as well as RogerEbert.com.
Thank you.
I've
Happy
been
to be here.
a longtime fan of your writing, especially on actors.
Yes, and I have always read your site. Yours was one of the first sites that I actually discovered when I started blogging and being interested in other people writing about film. And it's been so cool to be involved in this because I've been reading the SmackDown for years. It's amazing. So it's so fun.
Well, I'm glad you had a good experience with it. For those of you listening, we're doing the SmackDown Companion podcast a little differently this time because scheduling has been kind of a nightmare. So it's just Sheila and I. The first thing I wanted to ask you, because I was like, because in your writing I hadn't quite picked up on this before, but when you were talking about Geraldine Page, you mentioned a community of actors at the time in 84. So did you originally like study acting?
Well, I was an actress. That was how I started. As a kid, as a teenager, into my 20s and 30s, and then I sort of segued to writing. When that came out, I was deeply involved in acting training. I was in college, and I was studying acting in college. And because of just who we all were as act, like everyone was into, we had to work on Tennessee Williams scripts all the time. So Geraldine Page, with Sweet Bird of Youth in particular, was famous to us. None of us had seen her on Broadway do it, but the stories were sort of legendary, and Kazan's discussion of how he helped her do that role and all this stuff. So when this sort of legendary person was in this film for 7 minutes, I mean, we studied her like she had the secret, elixir to talent, kind of. I mean, we were young, so let's factor in how young we were. But it was as though, God, she is connected to something. She wasn't like a new actress. She was connected to the stuff that we all were learning about, which was Actors Studio, Strasberg, Tennessee Williams, all of those things that really, really matter to us. So yeah, that was why we had that was, that performance really struck all of us. We all went to see it together. I mean, for her, ridiculous.
Well, that's kind of fun though. And so now I know the secret of why you write about acting so well is that you had all this training.
Go somewhere, you know what I mean?
Well, so I mean, a lot of people actually, I've discussed this a tiny bit with Dan Callahan too. A lot of people who write about film, they don't really like
Don't
know.
even get me started.
Yeah, they don't really know that much about the process of acting. So like, it's really great when someone does because you get a whole different
It's a
sense.
whole other discipline than, directing. And directing, which also has its own fascination, obviously. You can kind of, I don't know, I definitely feel that there is more of a knowledge about what the director does than what the actor does in film writing. Once you get in, and you talk to a lot of actors as well, once you start to talk to people who actually do it, there really isn't that much of a difference because it's a collaboration. So the director is not an actor. He knows he needs the actor, or she knows, the actor is important to bring whatever they bring. But there's a little bit of a misunderstanding sometimes. I mean, not like Dan Callahan is an example of someone who really understands the craft of acting. There are a couple other that I read, Kim Morgan, Farron, as we know, self-styled siren, who can really focus on what they're doing, not just the end result, but why someone is so good on screen. Anyway, yeah, so was my start. I mean, I always was interested in directors too. Kazan was really the reason that I became aware of acting at all. It was when I was in Sweden and I was like, oh, I was like 12, this is something different and new and all that stuff. So yeah, anyway, long answer.
Well, I mean that's great. I mean, like I do find that I think that's why I like to read a wide variety of people too, because people have different expertise. You know, so people who know really a lot about costume design or know, you know, any individual craft within the movies, you can get, you know, completely different takes on why something is working or not working, actually.
I mean, the really good writers understand this, but I think sometimes, you know, there's the sort of cult of the director, you know, the author of. And I think that's, you know, a little bit of a crock. I don't know. I think, you know, obviously you can't do anything in a film without collaboration. Mm-hmm. You know, the craft services people are there to help you do what you're doing. So, yeah, I definitely, you know, and there are people who understand, you know, the history of Hollywood in a way that I couldn't even begin, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's definitely good to... read a broad, you know, spectrum of expertise. It's and, you know, but acting a lot of times does get short shrift, so I'm happy to try to
right other than people saying they were stunning or, you know, one adjective for a performance,
or like sometimes it seems like there's a feeling that the careers are like really, really planned. Like, oh, she's really working on this, when it's so chaotic on the other side. Even for stars, you know. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, so I hear a lot of stuff like, well, I wonder why she's doing this now as opposed to what she did before. Like, why doesn't she keep doing what I liked her doing, you know, 3 years ago? It's like, well, maybe she was contractually obligated. Maybe she wanted to kiss, you know, Johnny Depp, and that's why she did it. Maybe she... You know, there's so many reasons why, you know, it's very chaotic. You're lucky you have a job, even if you're a rising star, you mm-hmm. know. So, you know, I think there's a mystique around a lot of that.
And then sometimes they make, you know, mistakes just like anyone else. Like we can, like hearing in the comments, I did not know this, and I, you know, I don't have verification or whatever, but one of the commenters on the SmackDown mentioned that Glenn Close gave up a role in The Bostonians to play the role in The Natural.
Really?
Which is, I mean, gave up Vanessa Redgrave's role in The Bostonians, supposedly. Which is insane, to do this horrible part in The Natural, but then you never know how a movie's going
to
turn out.
Or, like, scheduling. Maybe she wanted to do a play. I mean, is there a reason why she turned it down?
I don't know.
That was mentioned? Yeah, because sometimes it's something as random as, you know, it's like Meryl Streep saying, well, I, you know... pick roles because it worked out with my kids' school schedule.
Mm-hmm, right.
You know, during the time when she was raising her children. It's like, that's, you know, crazy. But that's, everyone's a human. They all have different things that they're obligated to in their lives. But mm-hmm. yeah, so The Natural, though, I mean, should we just start talking about it?
Yeah.
Like, what... What did that role look like on the page that would make you go, oh, yeah, this is, I can really, really do something with this?
The only explanation I can think of is, wasn't it based on a novel?
Yes, which is beautiful. You know, it feels very literary, the film, to mm-hmm. me. I mean, it's so filled with, you know, symbols and, I mean, crashing... Klieg lights and lights, and, you know, all of those things that which really are very effective or can be very effective on the page. I know people have very strong feelings about that film and they love it. And I love baseball movies and I just don't consider that a baseball movie. It's an iconic, you know, reverie about Robert Redford, really.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny how it seems like a lot of his movies are that. I mean, not to accuse him of narcissism, but there's definitely elements of that sort of, like, reverie of sort of, like, the golden boy thing in so much of his stuff.
And I don't know how you would, you know, I think, how do you deal with being Robert Redford in the 70s? I mean, how do you kind of keep your bearings when you look like that? And you're the hottest actor in town. So I think, you know, he was, you know, I'm not sure how old he was. How old was he? He was like 48 when he did The Natural or something. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm not sure. In his 40s, though.
Yeah, so he's moving into a new, it's moving into the sort of the new phase of his life, which is always a very precarious moment for someone who is like the sex symbol to end all sex symbols. Mm-hmm. So I can see how it's like, okay, I still got it, you know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I probably thought, you know, nobody goes into something wanting to make something sort of bad or stupid or schlocky. Everyone goes into stuff in general with good intentions. And,
Yeah, and some of his more, like, sort of, some of his movies that are more concerned with iconography, like A River Runs Through It, or him as an ideal, like The Way We Were, function a lot better than The Natural does. So it's not necessarily that, you know.
No, because that's part of, it's almost like, you know, you're going to film, if you have Liz Taylor in the 50s, you're going to film Liz Taylor in the 50s. You're going to like, you know, like, let's use what we have. Like, but I think what we see in The Natural is that is no longer working at all, but the movie is pretending that it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're supposed to pretend that his pictures wind up looks amazing, and we're supposed to pretend that, you know, him having sex in the barn, I mean, he's 48
and he's playing a teenager. Yeah.
And her, well, she's like, I think she's in her 30s.
Yeah, she was 37, I think, at the time.
I mean,
yeah.
Laughing girlishly, like she's losing her virginity, and it was just, I mean, you know, they did what they could. It was, like, dark, so we're supposed to, but still, it just does not, you know, they should have just gotten younger actors. Just admit it. Just admit.
Well, and when you have to shoot in, like, long shot with, you know, a dark, or the soft focus, the famous soft focus to make people look younger, then just, you know, pick different actors.
Yeah, and then we could really see sort of, oh, okay. It just was, it was a little bit of delusional.
Although maybe the problem is, like, Glenn Close was never young. Maybe there was no actress who ever looked like her as a teenager.
She seems to have emerged middle-aged.
Right.
And I don't mean that as a, you know, diss.
Right.
That's what she brought. Like, I saw her on Broadway in Barnum, whatever year that was. It was around this time. It had to be, I don't know, 83, 84, probably. Mm-hmm. And she played, you know, this staunch Yankee, you know, his wife. And she has a sort of gravitas and seriousness,
yeah,
and semi-humorlessness about her that has served her extremely well, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Garp. I mean,
yeah,
it's like she's never been young or girlish.
Mm-hmm.
And so that opening scene in The Natural, she's sort of laughing girlishly, and it just doesn't say, no, it's not there, hon. Sorry. No. Nope.
And also, it just doesn't, like, nothing about her particular persona fits this character either.
Right.
And, so, it's just a miscalculation on multiple levels.
Not blame her for taking this part, because, you know, you're going to be opposite Robert Redford as his love interest, and that is a powerful position to put yourself in,
mm-hmm,
as a woman. You know, it's sort of, you're now a leading lady, you're not a character actress, you're gonna be, so I totally can understand that she'd be like, oh, whatever, sure, I can be a girlish virgin in a barn.
I'm an actress, I can do it.
I can do that, and I can Robert Redford, and I look at me, I got an Oscar nom. You know what I mean? She was not wrong.
So watching all of these movies, what was the, outside of the performances, since we did discuss them a lot, you know, in the SmackDown itself, what was your biggest takeaway from seeing all these back to back?
Seeing them back to back, I guess I was surprised at the fact that some of these were nominated, in a way that I was not expecting.
Mm-hmm.
Just the roles themselves, not the performances, because these are all clearly very gifted, wonderful actresses, but just the roles didn't seem to have And that may be a commentary on 1984 and the, you know, crappy roles that women are getting, were getting. You know, those second tier, the secondary characters. So, you know, Places in the Heart, Lindsay Krause. I just don't, that is not my conception of best supporting actress performance. It has nothing to do with how effective she is. I thought she was fine.
Yeah.
But the role, the role didn't have that thing in it that makes you go, oh my God, someone must acknowledge that this.
Like everyone was fighting for that part.
Yeah.
It was so good. Yeah.
You know, it feels even a role that's like 10 minutes where you're like, you know, I wish that someone would acknowledge how amazing this was. So that one definitely, and you know, it's always a weird thing with these best supporting categories, like Christine Lottie and Peggy Ashcroft, to me, those are like co-star roles, in my opinion. Those are as big as the leads. They get as much screen time as the leads. And, you know, you've shoehorned them into best supporting because that's how you're even going to win anything. I guess that was my main takeaway was that the role, and The Natural baffles me. That's all. Just absolutely baffles me. It has nothing to do with how good she is. It's the role. It's the boringness of the role.
The only thing that would have been more surprising about someone nominated from that, if it had been Barbara Hershey for like 1 minute of screen time.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. So, now, did
how about
you?
What was your takeaway?
Whenever we do these, like, I'm always struck at how Oscar movies, so to speak, end quotes, a lot of times you feel like they're choosing from a self-selecting pool.
Yeah.
Rather than a survey of, like, what actually happened that year.
Right.
And so, like, this is a classic example of that, because, like, I can totally understand Hoopla for Passage to India, even though a lot of it doesn't work. But, you know, like, The Natural, like, there had to have been a better options that people were aware of, even at the time. So it does feel like people are, like, self-limiting. And then one of the things about the acting races that always bothers me, in retrospect and at the time, is when people are nominated because of who they are. Because I think any actor that is legendary, like, say, a Glenn Close, they will have moments in their career, because they're legendary for a reason, where they will be totally worthy.
Right.
So there's no reason to sort of go out of your way when they aren't. Because
yeah.
They will be around again, you know.
Right.
And so it was yet another reminder of that. And it's also like a reminder of how things change, because I remember, like, I don't know if you saw Places in the Heart in 84, but I did.
Yeah, I did.
And I thought it was amazing in 84.
Yeah.
But I was young.
That last scene, which now doesn't really work for me, I was on the floor.
I was crying in the movie theater, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the reviews at the time were very reverential.
Yeah.
And
yep.
And so, like, I wonder, sometimes when I see these, I wonder what, not just the context, because it's hard to remember context, like, 30 years later, but but like what happened in cinema afterwards to make something seem like sort of perfunctory later on.
And I think I sense that in current races all the time.
Yeah.
Where, you know, establishment or like the vast majority of critics or whatever sort of get behind something. And I'm not questioning people's motives at all. People are going to love what they love. And I just, but sometimes I look at what is picked. You can feel it. You can feel how it's, you know, anointed early on before the race has even really begun.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes I'm on board with it and sometimes I'm so out of step with the zeitgeist that I just feel, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, so it's just a weird, you know, it's almost like a bad dream. You go like, oh my God, like The English Patient, what? Did that happen? Or Chicago. Chicago was the other one where I did not get it. It was a fine movie, but yeah. I did not get what was happening with the raves and the Oscar. Now, I just was like, you know, and then sometimes I'm like, oh, this is definitely, you know, going to be, there is a meaninglessness to it. And I hesitate to say that because it sounds like I'm a spoilsport, but, mm-hmm. You know, obviously it matters who wins and it gives people opportunities, but you know, the people who never won Oscars who are, you know, Cary Grant, let's just say, mm-hmm. You know, so there's, they get it wrong all the time, more than they get it right. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an insider type. I don't know. It's,
yeah.
It's sociological, economic. I don't know.
Right. So, like, I wonder, but, you know, like, Places in the Heart, something like that, was it, it felt so, like, sedate to me this time. And yeah. I think its reserve originally was maybe what was appealing to people back then.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out why people were so in love with it, because at least as much as I remember, it was like running second to Amadeus.
Yeah.
Which I think would shock a lot of like younger readers who watch these movies for the SmackDown.
Sure. I think maybe it's the sort of gritty, with quotation marks around it, you know, women wearing sensible shoes and dust storm stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, but it really harkens back to early cinema, too. Like, it really feels like that. You know, not just in its time frame, but that sort of, like, something like pure Americana or something.
Yeah, yeah. And unglamorous, you know, so we're in the middle of the 80s where, you know, it's Duran Duran time. And, which, yeah. No judgment, that was my stomping grounds. But so I think, you know, and I mean, we didn't talk about, but you mentioning which is your favorite farm wife, 1984, and I do remember that going like another farm movie star in like a little print dress that she made as she sweat over her sewing machine kind of thing. Right. You know, it was just one of those weird things that happened. I don't know. So I think, so maybe there was a level of, oh, look, no one's wearing makeup. I mean, sometimes that still happens today.
Like, right.
A really good movie because no one's wearing makeup. And
maybe it was, yeah, maybe it was especially appealing then because of how, like, the 80s were so, like, capitalistic, like, you know, yeah. me, like all the sort of like upwardly mobile. I don't know. I don't remember the 80s well enough because I was young to understand what was happening politically. But I think maybe it was like a callback to, you know, more like less narcissistic ways of living.
It was still, you know, where we saw not so much, you know, farm wives, but, you know, movies that were not touched up. I don't know. There was something that must have been.
yeah, because you see, like, in situations like that where, like, the context of the time frame, it you end up, like, short shrifting something that is, like, clearly amazing and was then, and is even more in retrospect, something, like, that's a total movie star glamorous performance that's way better than these in Kathleen Turner and Romancing the Stone.
Absolutely. I think, I don't know, I think a lot of times movie making really does its best work when it's in the realm of fantasy and those and comedy, which often is very ignored.
Yeah.
You know, so if you only judge the movies by the Oscars, you'd think it was a pretty humorless bunch of people.
Yeah.
Hard. And what are we still watching, you know, 80 years later, like Bringing Up Baby, you know?
Right.
So, you know, there's just this is like such a cliche to say, but, you know, so the industry, which is a chaotic industry, it's a money-making industry, but they also are artists, and many of them started out totally broke with awesome intentions. And so they congratulate themselves for doing stuff that's serious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I totally understand that. But in terms of, like, what lasts or what, you know, sort of resonates with many generations, it's usually the fantasy stuff or the comedy stuff, you know, mm-hmm. like Groundhog Day. We'll be watched when we are dust.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And I try to keep that in mind when I'm, I mean, I don't always succeed, of course, but I try to keep that in mind when I'm giving my own awards, that like yeah. light and fluffy does not mean that something's not very hard to make and very hard, very sure. like a true achievement if it comes out well.
A comedy that works, I mean, it's like a calculus equation, you know, it's very, very, very difficult, and very few people can do it well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and especially a comedy that doesn't sort of cement itself to a specific time where you have to sort of explain the jokes or explain, you know, someone falling right. on a banana peel will be funny to a 2-year-old, you know,
yeah.
and will last, you know. We're simple creatures.
Right. Well, I think that's why one of the reasons I love Romancing the Stone so much is it's like, even though all movies to a degree are time capsules of the time in which they were made, it's yeah. not really that referential of a comedy. Like, you don't yeah. have to know the 80s well to
no.
get it.
No, you know, it's like, you know, romance novels, which are eternal.
Yeah.
And adventure movies, which are also eternal. And so it's, you know, sort of winking at, you know, adventure and Indiana Jones. And, but those also have, you know, long histories back to the beginning of cinema too. So it sort of tapped into something. I still love that movie.
I still,
you know, and, you know, what are you going to do? It doesn't have the seriousness. And also the other thing with the Oscars is people nominate stuff because of the topic.
Yeah.
And
well, it's the same way of judging a performance based on what is actually on the page of the role. Like a farm wife, she's struggling for her, but that doesn't say anything about what the actor is doing with the part.
Right, right, right. Absolutely. And
Which is kind of like why I like I didn't give her a super high grade, and I felt it was really hard to like give them grades.
it
sometimes is really hard.
Yeah.
But like Peggy Ashcroft, like that performance, I do feel like that role could be interpreted in a lot of ways. So I do kind of like it, even if I don't love the performance, when a role like that gets nominated, because it's not just what's on the page. The actor is clearly, like, making choices.
And it's hard to, I mean, she brought something very, very mysterious to it, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's partly how it was written, you know, and what I said in my little thing is that, you know, she feels death approaching. She's probably ill already.
Yeah.
And so she's not entirely in control of herself. And so she opens up to the doctor in the mosque, that first scene, and she freaks out at the cave. And
yeah.
She's offended that they're eating cucumbers and watching polo, because that's not why she came here. And there's something about Ashcroft that made all of that very childlike, but also very wise. You know, it could so easily be, and I'm sure there are some people who do think it's like, you know, she just was looking for something exotic, mm-hmm. you know, and that's partially obviously what's going on in that book mm-hmm. and in the movie, but she brought to it this sort of approaching mortality that is quite universal, and mm-hmm. Without, you know, banging us over the head with it. So, and I thought she did a lovely job. It felt larger than a supporting role to me. It felt like just a co-star in mm-hmm. a lot of ways. But and she ends up being the key to the whole thing. She's the witness. She's
right.
There, so that sort of gives the role of, you know, unlike Lindsay Krause, who just has to have Ed Harris shove chocolate cake down his
It's like you have something against Ed Harris, Sheila.
Well, love Ed Harris. Are you kidding me? That was my first time seeing him, I think, in a film. No, it's just, listen, I'm not against.
Listen, I am pro Ed Harris. Ed Harris making out, and I am pro chocolate cake. So for me, that totally worked.
Pro chocolate cake. Maybe that's my problem. I don't like chocolate cake. But it was just such a mouthful. It was like, will she be able to breathe? I was concerned.
I did wonder about how many takes they did, because it did seem like they both had a lot of cake in their mouth when they started making out. And maybe Ed Harris isn't the most gentle of kissers either. So okay, maybe I can get what you're saying.
No, I don't need a gentle kiss. I just need a cupcake in my throat.
I do really like that scene, though. Like, speaking of, like, actors making choices, I do, like, as boring as the role is, Lindsay Krause, I did find, like, I don't really get the nomination, but I do think she did as much as maybe you could do with the part.
Well, I think it's quite an interesting role because, you know, if you just look at her, you have one opinion of her. But, you know, I thought what was really interesting was that her, you know, okay, so let's just, I'll stop joking about the cake and say, okay, so what that scene was about was to show that they still had a hot relationship.
Yeah.
She was not, you know, a wife who's going to just lie there and count to 10. She's like, wants her husband. And I kind of love that because she's got, you know, it made it sadder that he was kind of stepping out with this other woman. And because anyway, I thought that was an interesting, and she was great, and she doesn't often get to play stuff like that. And so I enjoyed that. It could have been a whole movie, that whole subplot. It felt sort of not tacked on. It was just a little bit much with the rest. We've got the blind guy and the kids and the clan and the handyman and the tornado. And it's like, oh, and suddenly we have this little soap opera in Dust Bowl, you know. But yeah, I thought she did a fine job. And she must have, I would imagine, the actress looking at that and going, wow, this is a lot. I get to play a lot of good stuff here. I get to be pissed. I get to be sexy. I get to wear sensible shoes.
I get to make a print dress.
I get to wear a print dress. I get to have as much cake as I want. And get to make out with this hot, steaming hot guy. Yeah, I thought it was good.
Okay, so we have one performance we haven't discussed, and we're running out of time.
Okay.
Christine Lottie.
Yeah.
Now, what do you make of all the rumors that Goldie Hawn... I don't remember this at the time. I did not see it in 1984.
Yes, a couple of people who I trust said, yeah, that one of them had seen the Demme's cut. That I guess Hawn didn't like. Is this the rumor that we're talking about?
Yes.
And said it was a masterpiece. And he's someone that I trust.
I felt it was like hobbled because I'm a huge Jonathan Demme fan. Like I love his stuff. And it felt very like tentative in ways that his movies don't usually, even when they're making mistakes.
I you know, knowing that, I think, I mean, it's for me, it's encapsulated in the final moment where they're outside, you know, they're now moving into suburbia. They're both married. They have washers and dryers. You know, they're going to be that generation, you know, but they come outside and she apologizes. They, you know, it's really a scene about really what was most important here is that we became friends, that women can kind of connect in a meaningful way. And they hug and they circle around and you see it starts on Hawn's face and circle around and it ends with Christine Lottie's face. And then there's this weird
freeze frame edit where it goes back to Goldie's. I noticed that too.
And
it's so uncomfortable.
It's so uncomfortable. And I mean, I'm just guessing that Demi did that because he didn't do that to be like, Han wasn't smiling properly in her close-up. He was doing it because this was a shared story. You know, Christine Lott, to me, it felt like a buddy comedy. Han was not the lead. It was about Han and Lottie together.
Yeah.
But...
Whereas Kurt Russell would have been, totally supporting instead of a co-lead.
Yeah, and, you know, exactly. And so... ending on the face of the co-star. I mean, I don't know. That felt to me, that's the main, obviously, moment where I thought, oh, okay, well, we're supposed to now remember that this was only one woman's story. I don't know.
Which is just, yeah, it does seem like there's so many competing agendas, which is strange because he's such a good director when it comes to, like, sort of chaotic, like, groups of people and like multiple character relationships happening at the same time, and this had that, but it just never, like, it felt very unfocused. It was strange.
Yeah. So by moving, you know, and both women's journeys, which were very different because they were different women, were fascinating and was sort of a cross section of the different stuff that was going on during the war, right? So what happens is, you know, okay, we need women to work. We need our, you know, Rosie the Riveters to come to work. And it was egalitarian in that all different kinds of women participated. So you don't just have, you know, the spinster ladies with a toolbox, you know, you've got the wives and you've got, you know, the floozy bimbos and you've got all of them, which is Demi really got. I mean, that's what, you know, when would Han's character and Lottie's character have been friends?
Right.
You know? And so to me, that was like clearly the story.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then it kept moving away from that. It's almost like it feels, you know, it kept going back to, I don't know. It was strange. It's a strange experience watching it now. I mean, I think everybody is so good in it, and I think the script makes, you know, the script makes many right choices, if that makes sense. The fact that Han goes back to her husband, I think, really works.
Yeah.
And that Kurt Russell goes off to be a beatnik, which, okay, fine, whatever. You know, on the bus with the jazz guys, and that felt very sort of adult to me. Okay, yep, the wartime was a different, you know, a different moment in time. Everybody was sort of floating around, unconnected to. So it had that complexity to it, and that you believed it. I believed that, okay, they're going to have a relationship, and it's going to be tough, and... I don't know.
I mean, it's rare that I feel this watching a movie, but I really wanted it to be longer.
Yeah.
Like, I'm very against, you know, movies going way beyond 90 minutes, but, like, I really felt like this one just felt really hemmed in.
Yeah.
Like, even the Goldie Hawn part specifically without Lottie felt very rushed to me. Like, her move from, like, resisting her extramarital affair to, like, giving into it felt very rushed.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think it would have really helped to have more of how she was being influenced by this far more liberated woman in her neighbor.
Yeah.
So whatever changes they made did not even help Goldie, I don't think.
No.
It's a study in don't let your ego get in the way of making a good movie? I don't know.
Yeah, and, like, you know, If you want to end on Goldie Hawn's face, then just go back and reshoot so that the hug ends the other way. I mean, don't, like, then place a freeze frame of Hawn. Yeah, It was very weird. So I was left watching it going, because I really related to the Lottie character, let's say that. You know, there's a part of me that probably would have been something like that. So I was like, oh, of course, you know, she is just as important as Han. She's just as, so I really just loved that last scene. And then, boom, nope, remember who is the star here. You know, and it was just very, it was phony. It was phony.
Right. Well, now that they're both older, maybe we could have them reteam for like a Whatever Happened to Baby Jane type of movie.
And I'm sure Han would love it too, because time has passed. And I love Goldie Hawn. I mean, she's one of my favorite actresses. Anyway.
That's all the time we have, but I want to thank you so much for doing this.
It's been so fun. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of your writing. Everybody read, go check out past articles at Sheila Variations.
I write for other outlets too. I have a film comment piece coming out that I'm very excited about, but I'm not going to say what it is. It's coming out this week.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so actor focused, one of my favorite actors.
We didn't even mention, like, this is a big deal for our readership, that you wrote Angelina Jolie's words for the Jenna Rollins tribute.
I did, which can never be shown, because they won't put it on YouTube because there's so many clips.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, this is classic Sheila, in my opinion, that the coolest thing I've ever been asked to do will never be seen by anyone. but Jenna saw it. So it was shown at the thing, and I got to see it. So yeah, that was the major, that's the weirdest, most random, you can't ever plan for something like that to be asked.
Yeah. So, I mean, did you get to, even though they're not going to show it on YouTube, did you get to see Angelina Jolie, like, a tape of her doing it or something?
No, they sent me the reel. They sent me a private link of the reel, so I heard her. I mean, it was I'm sitting in my apartment hearing her read what I wrote sitting outside, you know, by hand.
Oh, okay.
So it was, the word special doesn't even cover it. It sounds like I'm not bragging. It really, I couldn't.
No,
ever...
I mean, that's a huge honor. So
huge.
That's great.
I love Angie. I call her Angie now. And it was, and Jenna, I mean, you know how I feel about Jenna. And she's the great, she's everything. So that they asked me to do that. And it's funny. So often I write about actors who are dead. You know,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I pay tribute to my favorite actors, most of whom are dead. And to be able to do that for someone who's still with us, and to do it to her, you know, that I got, you know, my words were what were being said in that room when she got that award, was very, very meaningful for me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, congratulations. Okay, so everybody follow Sheila Kathleen, and make sure to check out her site, Sheila Variations.
Thank you.
Thank you.